Well, hello everybody, Justin Bell here on Drive to Win, presented by The Win Las Vegas and brought to you by Mobil 1 for the love of driving. Well, guess what? For the first time, I'm not actually going to start the show with Max Verstappen wins because he didn't. Now, I don't mean to sound elated about that. I'm not really excited for anyone's abject failure in a race by dropping out, but it did lead to a much more exciting race. So I'm really psyched to talk all about that. Was it a great race? Not really sure. But of course, when Max dropped out very early on, it created so many other opportunities. It felt like a great race. My guest this week is Elliot Hughes. He's a young guy, Formula One fan, one of the top journalists with my favorite magazine, Magneto Magazine. So I can't wait to speak to Elliot. He's joining us from England in just a few moments. But the top 10 was so resoundingly interesting. I thought I should start with that. Carlos Sainz, his third win. He's actually beaten Max twice in the last 40 races. And this actually ended Max Verstappen and Red Bull's 43 race finishing streak. In second place was Charles Leclerc. He wanted the win so bad that you couldn't really take away from the fact it was written all over his face post-race. And he was just looking on going, oh my goodness, Carlos beat me to the flag there, so to speak. Lando Norris in third place. Obviously great to get another podium, but he really did look on enviously at his great buddy Carlos Sainz taking first. And Lando has the dubious distinction now of having a 14 podiums that actually without getting a win, which isn't a great statistic. On one hand it is, on the other it isn't. Oscar Piastri, the Aussie racing at home, he was denied a home race podium. But if you take a minute to think about where they were a year ago, he's probably pretty excited with it. But in front of the home crowds, I'm sure he wanted that. Sergio Perez in fifth. I guess we should talk about that a bit later. Not a glorious result. Lawrence Stroll should be ecstatic, really. He had a strong run. Didn't actually remember anything he did in the race, but there he is with the Fernando Alonso penalty, dropping him back 20 seconds. It allowed Lance to get sixth place, which is a pretty strong result. Two of the Astons in the top 10. Yuki Tsunoda, he's killing it ahead of his teammate Danny Ricciardo, and Yuki should rightfully be very proud of himself. A very strong result. And of course, heading into the Japanese Grand Prix next, I'm sure he's got some good momentum there. Fernando Alonso, he placed sixth, but he had that rather, I don't know, it was a dubious penalty for a dubious action. We'll dig into that when he instigated the George Russell crash, literally on the last lap. Lots more to unpack there. In ninth place, Hülkenberg, I mean, just great for Haas. I mean, to get two cars in the top 10 because Kevin Magnussen rounded out the top 10. That is two of them in the points. Maybe the team did have something going on in the right way when they fired Gunter Steiner. So what a great top 10. I really enjoyed settling in. It was a bit frustrating because I was actually on the Steve McQueen rally up in the mountains with Chad McQueen, driving some beautiful cars, having the best time. But it meant that I kind of missed the race live. So I failed. I had to open my phone and see the results. And that meant that obviously I knew that Max had fallen out going into the race. So I didn't have that moment of elation that you do, not elation, but surprise or whatever you want to call it. And shock when something happens in a race. I kind of knew it was going to happen, but it still didn't take away from quite what a race it unfolded. My top stories of the week really are Carlos Sainz. I mean, from stitches to podium, effectively, we've all been following his medical treatment as it, you know, after the last race that he did have to sit out. And I've never had my appendix done, but I, like my dad did, and I know that was 100 years ago, but I know that it really does affect your abdominal wall, and all that Formula One drivers control the car is from their core. So, I think right up until he landed in Australia and then said he felt better suddenly, I don't think that was going to, it was almost on the cards who was going to be in his seat. But, you know, amazing, the latest medical and post-care. You saw his dad sitting by his bedside. He must have been sore, but adrenaline sorted that out. And he drove a masterful race, let's face it. I mean, when he went past Max, when Max was, you know, obviously ailing, although I don't think we knew that at the time, And he made a beautiful pass, set him up with the DRS zone, really doing what I've said every week. Just don't let Max get out of DRS range 1.2 seconds or 1.3 like he does every race. And I really wonder if Carlos would have been able to beat him regardless on track, because I think he was masterful. The pace was amazing. It was hot. His tire management was spot on. I mean, at the end, they had a little graining, but that's to be expected on the tires. And Ferrari didn't self-flagellate, so they didn't kind of mess it up, and they got to the end of the race with perfect pit stops. But my point of view on it is there's nothing like the intersection of hunger, talent, experience, motivation, and a big FU to the establishment, as in, Ferrari, you just let me go, and I'm going to prove to you that I am the guy. And also, what an audition for next year for teams that might be looking at him. It really shows what I've actually always said about him. He mentally, as a man, is one of the strongest manly men on the grid. And I think he could have beaten Max today. But I liked his post-race comment, life is crazy sometimes. I think that was a reference to you're up, you're down, and the roller coaster will eventually take you there. There was a great little, it was just a physics thing, on a meme on Instagram I saw, and it had the ball that's rolling, the ball bearing that rolls in a straight line, and the ball bearing that goes on the roller coaster. The roller coaster goes faster in the end. That's been my life, and it's certainly Carlos Sainz. The next story, the McLaren pace, I mean, great. In third and fourth, Lando, as I said, most podiums without a victory, which is 14. You just know he's going to be a winner. I mean, he's won in everything else. The minute that comes through, I think it's the floodgates will open. But it shows they really did pick up where they left off from last year. And I think they're positioning themselves for a supreme second half of the season. I just think both drivers, I love them. They're young, no compromise, and they're there to support each other. So really, Zak Brown also just announced an extension for a few more years on his contract, leading McLaren's racing division. It's just all coming together. And that, for me, is why you need two strong drivers. They can back each other up. They're there to manipulate strategy to the best advantage for the team, not just for drivers' championships, but manufacturers. They're there to defend. They're there to get the best information and data from testing. Every lap counts. That is why you have two drivers like that. And pretty much, arguably, I think they have the strongest two drivers in the on the grid. Now, Fernando Alonso, he is better than that. It was weird at the end. I get what he's doing. If you didn't watch it, he basically had George Russell right behind coming into turn six. And it's a very fast sequence of corners. As far as we could see, Alonso was just on his normal line. George Russell had to take some kind of avoiding action, went into the gravel, went upside down. Not a fun situation. But the way the data, and remember this, when you're inside a Formula One car, everything you do from the smallest throttle movements, your foot, basically, if you toot in the car, it shows up on the data. And he lifted early, he braked early, he re-accelerated, very slight modifications to his line. But Fernando is the master at positioning his car to stop the guy behind going by. It is a masterclass for every young driver. And if you remember in Brazil last year, he did that to Perez, because he just knew how to put his car in the right place. I don't think in any way had he intention of causing an accident for George Russell, but he knew that George would be within DRS zone, so he had to sort of check up a bit to get a faster launch out of the corner. Nothing is without planning for Alonso. So I think it was just, you know, kind of an extreme reaction to something that he did cause. You know, for me, Alonso is absolutely the smartest driver on the track. We've seen what he can do. He certainly doesn't need to resort to what they're throwing around on in the media as brake testing. He didn't do that. Brake testing, like you're on the highway, you brake and the guy behind goes into you. That wasn't it. I think he was doing everything to increase his own chances of holding position. The consequences were unforeseen, but it became pretty obvious pretty quickly as George went upside down in his mirrors. Mercedes, I think they're running out of adjectives to describe their dismal performance, aren't they? I mean, we had the power unit failure for Lewis Hamilton, and George was actually driving a pretty decent race, but like into the race battle with a spoon, not a knife. And the only knife involved was the knife edge on the car's balance. And it did not allow them to drive well. I mean, all weekend, they've been complaining of the way the car handled. And Toto Wolff is very vocal about it. And remember, he owns part of the team. So this isn't a job for him. This is his entire legacy. And the team, he thinks about it 24/7 and he lives and breathes it. So as he said, they haven't just taken a dumb pill since 2021. It's just remarkable that this early in the season, they are all standing there scratching their heads in bemusement on what is going on with their car. And it's, well, is it suiting the drivers? Is it not suiting the drivers? Are they, I mean, you've got two brilliant guys there. I think the biggest thing is that George Russell is consistently outpacing Lewis. And, you know, it just shows Formula One, it's tough, it's fickle. This is not a situation about a lack of driver talent, engineering talent, leadership talent, or lack of money. But it does make it look like Lewis may have made the move of the century with his shift to Formula One Ferrari at the end of the year. And as they're coming on song, maybe he is going to be joining just at the right time. Energy, he's like, you know, putting him with a young driver, with a young puppy in the house in Charles Leclerc, relatively. I think you could see him. Maybe he'll go on to his eighth championship that way. Anyway, time will tell. It's just a lot more this year to go. Sergio Perez, really, he did let the side down. What else can you say? He, you know, last week we were talking about the fact that he's doing the only job he's there to do. He seems resigned to it. Finish in second place, allow Red Bull and the strategists to manipulate and manage the race. But when you're sitting down there, I know he had a little penalty for obstructing and qualifying, but he's there and he's running around just about matching the pace of the McLarens in front of him and the Ferraris. And that is not the job he was supposed to do. If Max doesn't win, he should win, according to the folklore that is Red Bull's RB20. So I imagine he is feeling even more pressure. Someone else that's feeling a lot of pressure, Daniel Ricciardo. I think he is in the danger zone, isn't he? Apparently he's been given, according to social media, a 2-race window of opportunity to show that he really does have what it takes, or Liam Lawson will be in the seat. Now, talk about pressure. I don't think there's enough smiley teeth whitener in the world to bleach out the fact that he's being outperformed by Yuki, which is not what he's supposed to be there. He's supposed to lead that. And I don't think it's a question of, will he have a chance at the Red Bull seat next year? I think it's, will he have a chance to stay in Formula One next year? Pretty tough going. But I want to jump to something I was telling a friend yesterday. Here's what is incredible about Formula One drivers. Every single driver on their grid, pretty tough going. But I want to jump to something I was telling a friend yesterday. Here's what is incredible about Formula One drivers. Every single driver on their grid, Lance Stroll included, Yuki, even though they might not be world champion materials at this phase of their career or ever, if you take them out of it and put them into GT sports cars, WEC, they will shine. They're extraordinary drivers, right at the top of their game, the creme de la creme. And they will be able to find a great post-Formula One career in something else. So just saying that. But, you know, Daniel's an amazing driver. 242 races, 32 podiums, 8 wins. I mean, he's the drive to survive prodigy, but I think the pressure is right on him right now. So let's see how that one pans out. But one other thing that's happening is when he goes to Japan, the first practice, he's actually being replaced by one of the young Japanese Formula champions or top drivers. And that's going to put even more pressure on him, less time in the car. So if I'm Danny Rick, I'm really going to be having to dig deep. Well, Red Bull, of course, I'm not even going to talk about anything to do with Red Bull much this week, other than Max. I don't know. I'd love to have seen him go head to head with Carlos. I do think there was a fight there for the first time. And all the Red Bull scandal and all that, let's just wait to see how that pans out. I think it's been given enough airtime. And I really want Formula One I know it's a circus now, but let's not let the wild animals and the clowns take over. Let's just focus on the fact that it is the world's most elite sport, form of motorsport, and it's truly something that we should focus on, the on-track antics, really. Well, of course, I am here at the Wynn Las Vegas, and we have to reflect back that last year, the Heineken Silver Grand Prix was the star of the season. Shaky start, amazing finish. Everything here was taking place, and we had it all. From the official welcome party to that red carpet event that I hosted and didn't talk to Toto Wolff or Lewis Hamilton as they walked past. But I did get to Christian Horner and the Ferrari guys. It was just fantastic. And we had, you know, Lewis Hamilton's clothing collaboration with a Japanese designer, the 44. That was a pop-up here. We had the Netflix Golf Cup. That was extraordinary. And just, I mean, literally, I watched it the other day. It's just great entertainment. And of course, the spectacular and definitely fast emerging Las Vegas Concours right out on the golf course behind us. So there's so much happening. But remember, as I said last week, Las Vegas is an evolving beast. And you know that this year's event, in every way, from the hospitality to the activations to the on-track action and fan access, will be improved. And as always, the Wynn Las Vegas is at the epicenter of that. So I think packages for this week's Ultimate Race Week have just gone and being promoted. So head over to wynnlasvegas.com/experiences/ultimate-race-week, and you can find out all about it. Well, my guest, I'm pretty excited to have him on, mainly because I just love the magazine, but Elliot Hughes, he's a motoring journalist who spent the past 3 years writing for award-winning and a quarterly magazine called Magneto. It's just beautiful writing, the way it used to be, amazing photographs and images. And Elliot's one of those guys that grew up with loving cars in his veins. I mean, he has a master's degree in automotive journalism at Coventry University. He has an eclectic car collection with his Honda S2000, a Civic Type R, a Mazda MX-5, and an Audi TT. In England, we have small roads. We like fast little hatchbacks. But his petrol-free interests, he put here, include American football and sim racing. That's just to get you guys on his side, because I don't know too many English people who watch American football, but I'm looking forward to seeing it. He's a Formula One fan, has a lot of thoughts on the subject. So let's dive right in. Well, Elliot, welcome to Drive to Win. How are you, mate?
Very well. Thank you very much for having me.
That's good. I can tell you in England, you're wearing a thick, heavy jacket because it's still March in the north of England.
Yeah, I envy you. I'm sure it's probably a lot warmer where you are, so... Anyway.
Exactly. Well, as we just said quickly, we should jump in because I was thinking when I was watching the race, well, you and I are going to have a lot to talk about. What was your, how did you sort of leave the race? What were you feeling as you watched the flag fly?
Well, at the end, surprise, because before it started, I was very much expecting to see the usual Max Verstappen disappearing acts, but that didn't last long. So, and I'll admit I'm a Ferrari fan, so I was very happy. But yeah, it's nice to have a different winner for the first time since Singapore last year. So it's been a long time coming.
And as a Formula One fan, but also as someone that commentate, you know, you write about cars, you write about trends, you write about the latest and the greatest. How important do you think it is for the Formula One story that we got a break from Max's domination, even if it's for one race?
I think it's essential, really, especially as Formula One has grown. And I think the Drive to Survive thing really aligned with America's interest in the sport. And then as that kicked off, you got that classic season in 2021. And then since then, it's been Red Bull domination, and fair play to them. They've done amazingly, but it does get a bit monotonous, especially when you compare it to something like IndyCar, where there's different winners, you know, so often. So yeah, I think it's really good for the sport.
How is that whole, you mentioned Drive to Survive, how is that whole phenomenon viewed in the UK? Because we can take a position, can't we, as Brits? If it's too shiny, we go, oh, that's just American. I mean, but how's it been received? Is it the same way as it has here? People love it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's noticeable here. There's so many more people interested in it. A lot of, you know, people I know that had no interest in F1 whatsoever, and it was quite a niche thing before. Now it's really mainstream, and there is a bit of gatekeeping from the older fans, but I think it's better for the sport that it's you know, a big thing and more popular. But it's just got to try and maintain it. And I think the domination of Red Bull is a double-edged sword in that sense. But yeah.
Yeah, it is. I was just thinking as you were saying that, of course, nearly every Formula One team is based in the UK. It's essentially the first Formula One race was at Silverstone. You know, we have, or not, I don't know if it was at Silverstone, but it was in England. You know, so many people are affected by the business of Formula One, mechanics, engineers, fabricators, people that never go to races. That means their families are involved. I mean, it's a huge ecosystem, you know, all a lot around in the Silverstone area. So when a team's doing well, a lot of people are happy. And when a team's doing badly, it must affect a whole community. And when you look at Mercedes, I'm not really asking you to speak on behalf of the families, but Mercedes, what is wrong? I mean, how can it be so wrong? And I was watching this race and it was just even wronger. What's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it was jarring at first, but the scary thing is it's now becoming kind of normal, and it must be pretty devastating for the people that have worked on those teams and have dominated the sport for so long. And it's just got that sort of feel about it of one of those teams that's had this long halcyon period that's now, it feels like it's sliding and it's in decline, which is sad, but that's what happens. There is these periods of domination, and you've seen, you know, an exodus of major people from Mercedes. James Vowles, for example, is now team principal of Williams, and a bunch of people on the technical side. And obviously Lewis is going to Ferrari next year. So I think Mercedes is going through a period of change. It's just whether it can make its way back up to where it was before.
Yeah, because you look at it and you go, I just said before you came on, it's not for lack of money. It's not for lack of talent. Not, you know, they have their own wind tunnels. They got, you know, I think Toto's a very powerful leader of the band. And you can just see it in Lewis. I think he just scraped through last year and with his sanity intact, and did he maintained a good finishing result considering there were no highlights for him, so to speak of. And then you get into this year, he must just be so demoralized. And imagine what the debriefs are like. Can you imagine with Toto and them all looking at each other? I mean, George is probably the quietest in the group, but Lewis doesn't hold back, I'm sure.
I think they probably all want this year to end and maybe get as much out of it as they can. But it also makes you wonder how much is Lewis being isolated, because they know it's no secret he's going to Ferrari, and they don't want him to take information with him. So I wouldn't be surprised if the team's aligning itself more with George. I mean, they've got to.
This early on, you think they have to start aligning themselves?
100%. Yeah. I mean, there's no, Lewis isn't staying. And the more he knows about, you know, where Mercedes is going, then the more information he can take to Ferrari. So, and that's not going to help them.
No.
It's crazy, isn't it? It's a weird end to such a good period, but there we go.
I said on the last show something that, you know, maybe, you know, in certain American sports, they actually have a window where you're only allowed to discuss with other drivers and team movements within a certain like 2 month window. And I think maybe, you know, the FIA or Formula One are going to have to do something like that, because I think it's pretty destructive to have someone signing a new contract at the beginning of the season. When he's got a whole season, you know, I think it would be good to cut off those distractions. I think it's hard to enforce, but you know what I mean? Just like say it's, here's your contract season, now have a conversation.
Yeah, I mean, especially as the sport is, it's mirroring American sports with things like the budget cap. So that definitely makes sense. And we've seen this before when Vettel was leaving and he got axed before the start of the season. He knew Sainz was replacing him. Didn't do a lot for his motivation and stuff like that. So maybe that would be a good idea and would keep the teams more united. But then again, maybe the powers that be think it's more entertaining this way. I don't know.
Maybe. Well, you're a Ferrari fan. So there are two ways to respond to changing circumstances, aren't there? One is you stick your head in your butt, and the other one is that you go and win a race. And for Carlos Sainz, what a job, or, you know, what a promotion of his abilities, as if it was in any doubt, to stomp away this weekend. It was just great, wasn't it?
I'm thrilled for him. It's so good. I think he's really underrated. And then to come back from appendix surgery and on the back of the news that you're being replaced, it's remarkable. And you saw how he got out of the car, and you could tell he wasn't 100%. No. And he was completely faultless from start to finish. And, you know, there's some commentators that are saying that even if Max didn't have the problem that he had, then Ferrari may have had the pace to win anyway. So that would have been nice to see, but I'm glad that they got the win anyway.
Yeah, I think we're going to see that come true at some point. But I don't think Carlos suffers from this as much as maybe like a Lando and some of the other guys, because I think Carlos is the strongest, one of the strongest mentally behind the wheel. You know, he controls the play. He's very, very alpha in the way he approaches things. But we have seen it that there is the Max Verstappen effect, isn't it? There's the, oh my God, he's behind me, he should go by. Oh, we're side by side on the front grid. Oh, he should probably win to the first corner because he's going to go by anyway. There's definitely an element of that, whether people like to discuss it or not. And if Max had stayed in the race, would that have affected the Ferrari strategy? Would they have been able to go so far, you know, fast? You just don't know, because Max kind of knocks his people's confidence down. But pretty much Carlos did the same thing. He sodded off into the distance and held it. And Ferrari didn't step on their own bits, you know, for the first time. I was kind of waiting for that, weren't you? I was going, what strategy? What are they going to do? But they didn't. It was Red Bull-esque.
It was, yeah. Especially, I mean, I got nervous in the final pit stop. I was thinking, oh, it's coming. Are they going to get a wheel stuck? Are they going to, you know, do something silly? But no, they completely held it together. And I think Fred Vasseur has been a really good hire. I think we're really starting to see his influence now. So, yeah, I think they're on the right direction. And hopefully Lewis's experience and everything will continue that next year, but we'll see.
We'll see. I mean, he could have pulled off the masterstroke of the century, couldn't he? Going to Ferrari when they're on the up and, you know, the rising tide, and then get an eighth championship. I, for one, would like to see that. I think that's really good.
Me too, yeah.
Where do you think Carlos will end up? If you were a team manager, who should be fighting to get him?
I think everybody at this point. You could make the argument, have Ferrari got rid of the wrong person? Red Bull have openly, I mean, Christian Horner has openly kind of put the idea out there over the past few days. There's plenty of space up and down the grid. I actually think, you know, he was rumored to be going to Sauber. I think he deserves a car that can win now, really, with how he's performing.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised to see him take Checo's seat, but then it's whether Max would want that. But then again, there's rumors Max might leave, as weird as that is. So who knows at this point? This year has been crazy.
It has been crazy.
It's completely up in the air.
And the money that, you know, 100 mil to Lewis, and God knows what, you know, what everybody is going to be doing. But I think you're right. I think Carlos, even though apparently, you know, back in the day, he and Max have had their moments and didn't do well as teammates once upon a time. But I think they've matured now. And I actually think Max is a guy that wouldn't shy away from a fight. I think he's ready for a scrap. I think half these races, he must go home and just say to his dad, I mean, off camera and out of the range of the media, that was a bit dull, you know, when I need to be challenged. I really do think he's a fighter, like they all are. So who knows, maybe under the same roof, Carlos and him would be just fireworks.
I mean, how accurate do you think these rumors are that he might go to Mercedes? Could that be part of that? I mean, it seems weird to me that he'd want to get out of the best car, but...
Yeah, I don't know. The thing that I thought last week when I heard it seems a lot more sense. If Aramco are going to buy Aston Martin Racing, then of course that will trigger Lance out, because, you know, I think his dad's probably going, I've spent hundreds of millions of dollars, mate, and you're sonny boy, and I think the ride is over. Lance quite rightly should go and drive like the Aston Martin wet car. He's brilliant in something like that, I'm sure. And if Aramco did buy Aston, they're going to put billions into it. And then maybe that would be a good place for Max and his engineer to end up.
Or science, yeah.
You know, who knows? Like you're saying, I just don't know what's going to happen. I think Mercedes would be the least juicy option in a way. I'd rather go, you know, but when they come right, Mercedes will be dominating again. I guarantee that within the next 3 or 4 years, you and I will be chatting and be like, Mercedes, bloody dominance. You know, they just won 8 races in a row. Yeah. You know, it's Formula One. That happens.
You really do need a crystal ball to work out which team is going to be dominating. And it's a very hard thing to do. Lewis is probably the best at it. And then you've got someone like Alonso, who has a habit of choosing the worst team at the worst time until recently. So, but then again, Alonso is rumored to be perhaps taking Checo's seat. And that's something I would like to see personally.
That would be interesting. One last shot at the Holy Grail, right? Because he's good enough. You know, he's smart enough. And but if I was Max, I'd be more worried about an Alonso sitting next to me than I would a Carlos Sainz. You know what I mean? Because I think Alonso is the ultimate psychologist, strategist. And I think he can outplay everybody. But wouldn't it be fun to watch?
It would be very fun to watch. He's just dogged. He'll do anything to win. I mean, we saw it, you know, last weekend with the move he put on Russell.
What are your thoughts on that? Yeah.
As a driver, I mean, I don't think he intended to put Russell in the gravel, obviously, but it was clearly pretty naughty when they released the telemetry and I believe he lifted 100 meters earlier than usual, downshifted and dabbed the brake, and then got back on the power again.
Mm.
His excuse was setting up the exit for the next corner, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think you've got it right there, but I'll add one thing. You know, it's like, we've seen it in less dramatic consequences. But if you've got the guy behind, let's just say you're coming to a hairpin, which they weren't, but you're coming to a hairpin, you know, you'll check up a little early, totally within your right. And then, you know, while the other guy's braking, you know, you're off and you get a better exit through the corner. I think philosophically, that's what he was trying to do. But they're coming into that sequence of corners, turn 5-6 there at mind-numbing speed, and it doesn't take much to take the airflow away from the front. So I think it may have just been a rare error caused by a preconceived plan. You know what I mean? He knew what he was doing. He just didn't realize it was going to go so, you know, wrong so fast. And I'm sure when he looked in his mirror, he must have been, oh my God, they just put him on his roof. So he did deserve. He did deserve a penalty, that's for sure. But as they said, the stewards, Elliot, you can't judge it by the consequence. You can only judge it by the accident, you know, by the deliberate act. And that's why he got the penalty. So,
yeah, which I think is right. And you could make the argument, would he have got the penalty if there wasn't that dramatic crash? I'm not sure, but.
Well, no. And crazy. Crazy to watch. Well, all I know is that even the best are capable of a screw up once in a while. And I think that was one. And you could tell George was absolutely freaked by it. And the radio transmission was a bit panicky, wasn't it? It was horrible. And of course, it looks from the outside much more transparent that he wasn't about to get hit or anything. But I mean, I've been in a car upside down and you can hear the fuel pump going. You know, it's actually bloody terrifying. And those cars are so restrictive, so claustrophobic for the drivers. Anytime you're not pointing the right way up, I think it's a very scary moment. So I don't blame him. And why did they take 15 seconds to call the red, right? It's just still doesn't make sense.
Yeah, they just put the VSC on, didn't they?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine what it would be like in that situation, but that's why they're gladiators and we love to watch them, because it is dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Every time it happens, anything like that, I go, it's another good episode of Drive to Survive. How are they going to paint that? What are your thoughts on McLaren? I'm actually loving where they are right now. I think that Oscar and Lando are showing why you need two compatible, strong drivers together, because you can control it the same way the Ferraris were. If you think back to where they were a year ago, it's been a pretty good journey under Zac Brown and Stella and, you know, my late friend Jill DeFerrer. I mean, they all put a lot of work in, and now they're showing the results. I predict they're going to have a really good second half of the season. What do you think?
It's been a long time coming, and it's great to see McLaren back up there where they belong. And if they can develop the car for the rest of this season how they did last year, then I think they're going to be very, very competitive. I mean, they already are. You saw how they performed in Australia, and Oscar and Lando look like one of the most complete driver pairings on the grid at the moment, I would say. So, yeah, exciting times for McLaren.
Yeah, but you do see the look on Lando's face. He was just like, really? I mean, I just can't. I mean, I just have to win sometime, right? I mean, he just looked kind of dejected.
He has a 5-belt record now.
I know. All right, 14, right?
Yeah.
That's wild.
He's so unlucky. I mean, Ricciardo got the win in, was it 22?
Yeah.
And then Piastri got the win in the sprint race last year. So he seems to have some sort of jinx at the moment, but I'm sure he'll overcome it. I wouldn't be surprised to see him win a race this year.
Yeah, I really agree. But I love the fact that the two of them they're just tough cookies, right? They got sort of like a strut to them, and I think it's going to be good. We're going to see some great stuff. You mentioned Danny Ric. He's probably in the crapola right now, isn't he? That's a pressured situation.
Yeah, it's not looking good. I mean, he's getting blown away by Tsunoda at the moment. And then you've had Helmut Marko putting the pressure on. I mean, do you think he's going to see out the season? I can't believe we're saying that already.
No. But I agree with it. I hate to say, not if it was a rookie coming in, you have to give someone
their... last year.
Yeah, like De Vries, you know, that was a little harsh, really. But you're dealing with hundreds of millions of dollars, and there are talent out there. I don't think, Daniel is such a known quantity, and he's so important for the fabric of Formula One. He makes the show great, but this must be surprising him of how kind of mediocre his performance has been. And the social media gossip was that he's been given a 2-race window within which to shine and show what he can do, or they'll put Liam Lawson in. And to be honest, I think you should do that. I think that's the way to go.
I totally agree with you. It's been a bit disappointing so far. And for someone of his experience, he's really... I mean, look what Alonso's doing in his early 40s. Yeah. I can't work out where the pace has gone, because he was one of the elite drivers not so long ago. I just don't know what's happened to him since he drove for McLaren. He's just not been the same person. And then he obviously had this Red Bull test where he set a really quick time at Silverstone last year, and it's just kind of fizzled from then on. So it's sad to see, but I think, when you've got someone like Liam Lawson waiting there in the pit garage, I think it's probably time to make a change if things don't change drastically for him.
Yeah, it's the tough pressures, the harsh realities, and Red Bull have never been shy of it, have they? Of, you know, bringing the axe across the top of the head. While we're talking about Red Bull, has the whole sort of scandal thing died down a bit in the UK? Or were you guys as excited, you know, rabid for the latest every day like we were over here?
I mean, it was front page news for weeks.
Yeah.
And finally, the novelty seems to have worn off. And I don't think the whole fiasco has ended. I think it's probably still bubbling away in the background. And what direction it will take at this point, I don't know. But you didn't hear as much about it last weekend, did you? Or
no.
I certainly didn't. So I think people probably have moved on to the next thing now.
Yeah, we're still going to have more fireworks to come, but it's one of the things that really concern me, and Lewis, obviously, much bigger platform than me to say it, but, you know, is like the Formula One show mustn't lose sight of what we do. And it was starting to get a bit bizarre with, you know, the president of the FIA getting investigated and this, and Susie Wolf suing the FIA. I mean, it's kind of a wild shit show. And I'm really glad that you know, let's focus on some of the racing and get on with it, because you don't want it to explode. You know, you don't want it to become too much of a social media phenomenon, right? That and just cater to that rabid crowd. You want to remember that this is serious form of motorsport that you and I have loved for years.
Yeah, it's the pinnacle of motorsport, and the focus should be on what's happening on track. I think people, you know, do enjoy the politics of it, even if they don't admit it. But some of this is probably being a little bit distasteful. So I think the sooner it's resolved, the better. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I do think it's a bit strange that it's happening in a team where they're winning everything. So you'd think that they'd want to keep stability as much as possible. So a lot of the political wranglings are a bit odd to me, but there we are.
Yeah, there we are, out of our pay grade. Forecast for Japan, what do you think? I mean, it's going to be interesting. Max coming obviously back, he just gets back on business as usual. But I really do hope that this has given Ferrari that confidence. Hey, we're back to winning. I wonder what Sergio's going to do. I mean, what are your thoughts coming into Japan?
I think on paper it's a Red Bull track because it's very twisty, high downforce. But I think it could be close. I don't think it's going to be the domination that we saw last year, particularly if Ferrari can continue the momentum that they've got. McLaren are pretty good on high downforce stuff as well, so I think they'll be up there. But if barring any weird reliability stuff or crashes or anything, I'm expecting a Max back on the top of the podium, to be honest.
Yeah, I bet you're glad you don't have to write that headline every week, right? Can you imagine? That's it. Max wins.
Yeah,
must get a little bit dull for everybody on the Formula One press fleet. But saying that, just give me an update on what you're doing. How's Magneto doing? What have you driven recently?
I drove a DB9 on last Friday.
So
that was cool. I've not driven a DB9 before. So that was to celebrate the car's 25th anniversary. So that feature will be going in the next issue, which will be on sale in May. I think on May the 9th. So yeah, very, very busy. April's going to be mad because we're all on press.
Okay.
Yeah, all good.
Good stuff. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us. That is really great. Love the magazine. Love your work. Really cool. Glad we pulled this together. And, you know, by the end of the year, it's that crystal ball thing. I know it's going to be Max, but can you just imagine if it was as tight as it could be all the way through to the end of the season? It would be spectacular.
I've got absolutely everything crossed. And if it's not this year, then I've got hope for next year. So
exactly.
We'll see. But yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
All right, buddy. Take care. Thanks, man. Well, anyone that knows me knows that I like a little bit of revelry. And so apparently does the Wynn Las Vegas, because they recently revealed Revelry, which is an all new culinary festival. It brings together some of the world's most esteemed chefs, best in class vintners, mixologists, art installations, and live entertainment. Now, the festival events include an East meets West collaboration dinner, a mixology masterclass, an all-star chef's dinner, a Four Sixes Ranch country cookout, a Casbah marketplace, and so much more. And it all takes place at incredible venues around this beautiful property. Now, Revelry will take place Wednesday, June 5th through Saturday, June 8th, and it's all here at the Wynn Las Vegas. For more information, head to lasvegasrevelry.com. That's lasvegasrevelry.com. I always love talking to Brits about Formula One because, you know, as I said, it's the home of Formula One spiritually and physically for so many of the teams. And there's always a little bit of a different angle coming out of my mother country. So looking forward to Japan. Will it be back to his winning ways for Max? You heard Elliot say it as well. Probably. But I think the gap is going to be a lot closer. And maybe this has given Ferrari, especially Carlos and Charles, to be fair, the psychological boost that they really needed going into the next race. And, you know, they should and can win races. Yuki will obviously want to capitalize on his great result this weekend. And he has such momentum, and that is so important as well for the team. But at what cost to Daniel Ricciardo? And especially, as I mentioned, They have Ayuma Iwasa, who's a super Formula driver. He's won a lot of races over there. He's obviously one of the rising stars. And he's in that Red Bull program, and he'll be doing FP1. A lot of drivers, you know, a lot of the teams you see do that at certain races. It's part of the program, mandated. But what a crazy thing. The Japanese fans will be in a frenzy. And believe me, I've raced there. They go mad to have two Japanese drivers out for the first session of the weekend. So the pressure will be, if the kid does a good job, it's a track he'll know incredibly well, motivated by, you know, the flying Japanese flag. I think it'll put the extra pressure on Daniel. Can you imagine if he's not as quick as the stand-in driver? That would be a disaster. One thing's for sure, we will have loads to talk about on Drive to Win coming up in a couple of weekends' time. So stay in touch on social media. Thank you so much for watching. And as always, remember, if you can subscribe, share, tell everyone about the show, it'll really help out. A big thanks to the Wynn Las Vegas, as always, for letting me use the studio, and of course to Mobile One for the love of driving. See you soon.